It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Recent years have seen a variety of new challenges for higher education in America. The Trump administration has targeted some colleges, launching investigations around allegations of anti-Semitism and racial discrimination against white students, and pulling billions of dollars in federal research funding. Meanwhile, staff and faculty at universities across the country have come under increasing scrutiny for what they teach and even what they say on social media and elsewhere in public. Beyond that, there are ongoing questions about the value of a college education. And Illinois schools are up against some of their own unique problems, from declining enrollment to a lack of funding from state government. One school all that is affecting is Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. The school has just over 16,000 students as of this fall. That's up a few percentage points over last year, but still down from the mid-2000s when more than 25,000 were enrolled. Dr. Lisa C. Freeman has been at Northern Illinois University since 2010, and in 2018 she was appointed president. Her academic work is in biology and pharmacology. She's also vice chair of Campus Compact, a national nonprofit organization connecting hundreds of colleges and universities in the name of creating, as the group puts it, effective community and civic engagement. President Freeman joins us live today as we continue our conversations with university leaders across Illinois. Dr. Freeman, welcome to the 21st show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And again, listeners, we are live today. So if you want to join the conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number. What do you think higher education is doing right in the current climate? Or maybe you think they're doing something wrong in the current climate. Maybe you're based in or around DeKalb, or you're an alum of Northern. How do you think the school's doing? And what questions do you have for NIU's president? 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. One other brief note I should mention, our partner station, WNIJ, is licensed to Northern Illinois University, but as always, we do not share our questions with guests beforehand, and they have no say in our journalism. All right, President Freeman, I want to start by getting your view on those enrollment statistics I mentioned. Again, it's up from the past few years, but still down pretty significantly from the historic highs. What do you think that says about the state of Northern Illinois University?
Well, you know, Brian, when you look backward at those historic highs, the numbers were very large, but the university was riding the demographic wave. And if, in fact, you look at student success, retention, and re-enrollment, we had nothing to be proud of back then. It's just as the students who joined us left without degrees, we were able to fill their spots very quickly. You mentioned that enrollment is up this year, and I'm very, very proud not only of the fact that it's up, but also the way that it's up. We're up significantly in new freshmen, up 22% in new freshmen, up 11% in new transfers. And we're also up significantly in retention of first-year students and overall undergraduate re-enrollment. And this is the result of intentional steps we've taken to demonstrate the value of our degree, the quality of our academic programs, to make sure that our financial aid is packaged in ways that make our education accessible and affordable and allow us to match talent with opportunity. We've really worked hard to make sure that the students we accept have the support they need to make it to, through, and even beyond the university to be successful. And so I feel very good about enrollment. We have just come off of our homecoming week. That was a week of events last week when we had so many of our alums come back to campus. And it was very gratifying for me to hear our successful alumni talk about the ways that NIU launched them for their professional careers, their lives as contributors to their communities, and the things that we did right inside and outside the classroom. So I feel good about NIU, and it's been a great couple of weeks here on our DeKalb campus.
You mentioned that idea of, I think the term you used was completion and re-enrollment. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. What is that figure? And I think this is something that doesn't get discussed enough. People maybe don't realize how few or what share, I won't put a spin on it, but what share of freshmen actually sort of finish their degree in a, you know, normal 4 or 5 year path, however you define that. Can you put a figure on that?
The first indicator of doing something right is the number of freshmen from the fall that return in the spring and then the next fall. Those are early indicators because that shows students are on track to graduation. And for us, our fall to spring re-enrollment last year was about 83%, and our overall fall to fall retention of new first-year students was 73%. That's up, but it's not good enough. We'd like to see that number in the 90s, and that's what we're working for.
And has that changed significantly? I don't know if you can speak to that over the decades. I mean, you mentioned riding the demographic bubbles of 20 years ago, for example.
In the period of time when we had more than 20,000 students, our first year retention rate was 60%-ish.
Okay. I understand that Northern also, when it put out its enrollment numbers for the fall, is now a federally designated as a Hispanic serving institution. What does that mean?
The federal criteria for being a Hispanic serving institution include not only a Hispanic or Latino-Latina enrollment at the undergraduate level of 25% or more, but also a significant percentage of high-need students. And in fact, NIU is very proud that half of our overall undergraduate student body is eligible for Pell Grants, meaning they're from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and also that they're first in their families to go to college or first generation students. So, because we serve students with high need, and we also have a Hispanic enrollment of more than 25%, we are designated as a Hispanic serving institution. But we're more proud of the fact that we are a Husky serving institution, that we serve students. We match talent with opportunity. We support students who are low income, first generation, who come from marginalized communities. And we are particularly proud of the fact that the demographics of our student body reflect the demographics of the region that we serve and the changing face of America. We are about equal in our number of white students, Hispanic, Latino, Latina students, and Black African American students.
You know, there have been a long, long concerns about particularly what we call the directional universities here in Illinois, right? Northern and Southern, Western and Eastern. Each have their own sort of particular backgrounds and challenges and students that they serve. State funding, though, has been a big issue for, I believe, all of them. Can you talk about the headwinds that Northern Illinois University might have faced in that regard?
Absolutely. And I will say that each of our public universities has, as you mentioned, a distinct mission, distinct enrollment, and serve different communities. Eastern and Western are not public research universities. Southern and Northern actually are Carnegie designated Research II universities. So our missions are not similar even across the directional institutions. One thing we do all share is that we don't have adequate, predictable support from the state, and that's something we've been working very hard. Currently, our public universities are funded with a formula that is historic, but does not have a rational basis related to the number of students who you enroll, the needs of those students, or the mission of the university. That's been a challenge. I think for those of us who've been in Illinois as long as I have, we know that in addition to being challenged, as all universities and all of our country was by the global pandemic, Illinois public universities had the unique challenge of the budget impasse in fiscal year 16 and 17 of going 700 days without appropriated funds. All of these challenges certainly exist for us, and they're only compounded by the changing federal landscape.
Yeah. And you know, there was legislation in the General Assembly this year that would have changed how Illinois' public colleges and universities are funded, with priority going to schools that are under-resourced. Northern, for example, has only about half of what would be considered adequate funding, at least under the sort of proposal as it was at the time. And that's, or I should say, that's according to the Illinois Commission on Equitable Public University Funding. The U of I system opposed those changes. Ultimately, the bill did not pass. What happens if Northern is not able to close that funding gap in the long term?
We are committed to being fiscally sustainable and to owning our own future. state funding is an important piece of that. And I think a rational funding formula, such as the one put forward in that bill, would be an important step there. But there are other things that we can do to control our destiny. We are always looking at ways that we can be more efficient, ways that we can be more efficient in our administrative processes on our own campus, ways that we can share resources with partner universities to increase our overall efficiencies, ways that we can partner with the private sector to help us be better. Within the past year, we partnered with Trane in an energy savings agreement that will help us modernize our facilities, increase both our environmental and fiscal sustainability, and do that in a revenue neutral way because we're paying for those changes with the future savings. We're also in the middle of a public campaign, a comprehensive fundraising campaign with a $300 million goal. We're at about $172 million towards that goal the last time I looked. So we will control our own destiny, but as a public institution, that helps the state economically, that serves the students and the communities of the state of Illinois, we certainly believe that we should be given adequate, equitable, predictable funding.
And Northern has been up against a budget deficit in recent years, tens of millions of dollars. I think at the end of fiscal 2024, it was more than 30 million. I understand that was cut roughly in half last year. How do you continue to close that gap?
We submitted a balanced budget for fiscal year 26, doing the things that I spoke about, becoming more efficient, creating different structures, and increasing enrollment to increase revenue. So I think that we will keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we're doing the things that we need to do so that we can continue to have positive impact on students and communities for years to come.
Who do you see as Northern's competition, right? Is it the students who are going to Urbana-Champaign or Northwestern, or is it students going to Iowa and Wisconsin? I mean, there have been a number of reports about how Illinois tends to have more students going out of state for school than other states do. How do you think of like to whom you are trying to appeal?
That's a great question, and I think it's kind of a two-part answer. So, if you ask me which universities within the state or out of state do we compete most with, it's definitely the other public universities, Urbana-Champaign, UIC, Illinois State, and then some privates like DePaul or Loyola. But if you look at where the students who we accept, who have the credentials coming out of high school that are consistent with their ability to succeed at Northern Illinois University, the greatest proportion of students that we accept who do not ultimately come and enroll at NIU don't go to any other university and don't go to any community college. They're students who don't enter higher education. They're choosing to enter the workforce to go nowhere. And those are students that we know could succeed here, that success, that degree attainment would have economic benefit, that they would benefit from the financial aid that and support that we offer. And so that's a population that we continue to be very interested in.
What do you think of the argument, though? Because you do hear that from people from time to time. You know what? Maybe no college is a better option for some people, right? You can, frankly, I know journalists who left journalism to go to the Union Electricity or Electrician Trade School, and they're making a better living than they would have had they continued with their, college degree in journalism. How do you respond to that argument that, no college is maybe a better option for more people than have thought so in recent years?
I think that no college, that going to trade school are viable options for individuals. Some individuals who are choosing that are making exactly the right choice for themselves. There are others who are making poorly informed choices. They come from communities where they don't have role models. They've been told that college isn't for them. They've been told that the short-term gains from the earnings you get entering the workforce will give you a life that's filled with civic engagement and professional success and happiness when there may be a ceiling to their earnings. The fact is that college graduates still earn more on average than those without a degree. And that there are folks who enter a trade or who enter the workforce who subsequently, at a later point in their life, find themselves as members of the incumbent workforce who have reached a ceiling that they can't continue to progress or advance in their careers without getting some additional credential or degree. I think our public universities need to serve all of those.
And what about this argument that maybe there is too much redundancy in higher education, right? Do you need, engineering programs at all the different universities that have them, dance programs, right? Accounting, whatever it is. Maybe there should be more specialization, divvying things up, if you will. How do you respond to that? Because I've heard that from Illinois lawmakers from time to time.
I think that education is expensive, and public universities need to be good stewards of our public funds. That is our obligation. When folks from outside the university think about how to save money, they immediately go to let's collapse or cancel academic programs, close colleges, combine universities. And they believe that we don't do those things on our own. But the truth is, universities are always looking at what the workforce demands, what students are interested in, what programs have high and low enrollment, and making changes and mergers and introducing new programs and stopping old ones. There's a lot that could be saved by looking at how to combine administrative functions, more back of the house functions for universities, how to be more efficient with purchasing jointly across all of the public universities, with administrative processes related to state compliance, being more efficient across all of the universities. So I believe that our universities could be more efficient. I think some of the lower hanging fruit is not with academic change, but with administrative consolidation.
Sure. All right, we're going to continue with President Lisa Freeman of Northern Illinois University. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. We're going to take a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with the president of Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Lisa Freeman, part of a series of conversations with higher education leaders from across Illinois. If you have your own thoughts or questions on some of the topics we're talking about, you can join us at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, President Freeman, I want to get to some of the more difficult questions about the federal government in a moment, but maybe we can take a breather from some of these topics to talk about NIU athletics. The Huskies football team, I understand, will be playing in the Mountain West Conference for the next six seasons. I can only assume conference officials have never been to Illinois. Otherwise, I'm not sure how we qualify for a Mountain Conference. What's going on there?
Certainly we're seeing conference realignment across college athletics. And for us, the decision to play football in a different conference than most of our Olympic sports was related to the economic opportunity, the opportunity to showcase our very successful football team in a different region of the country, which would be good for enrollment as well as for the alumni donor and fan experience. On the East Coast, it's much more common than in the Midwest until recently to see different sports play in different conferences. I'm a graduate of Cornell University. Most of their sports played in the Ivy League, but lacrosse and hockey, they're two sports that were the most competitive, played in different leagues. And that was pretty much the norm. So this is an opportunity for our football team, which is known for doing things like upsetting the University of Notre Dame
I was going to
in a
say,
football
number two, Notre Dame. That's right.
game, to have the opportunity to play different competition in a conference with a different reward structure.
Do you think college athletics is recognizable in 10 years from now with all the changes we've seen with NIL and sports betting and conference realignment? And I mean, the Big Ten now stretches from coast to coast, for example.
I'm not sure college athletics is going to be recognizable in 10 minutes or 10 weeks or 10 days, never mind 10 years. I think there's going to be a time of reckoning when we have to decide that the things that we value most about college athletics, the way our student athletes contribute to the university and on our communities, the way college sports prepare students for success afterwards, the developmental aspects of college athletics, we're going to have to say these are the things that matter. And those are not things that can be preserved in the armed race that's going on right now.
All right, let's talk about some of these federal issues. I want to come back, or start, I should say, with enrollment. We talked about that earlier, but overall enrollment is up. International enrollment at Northern, though, is down, I understand, about 20%. How has the
It is.
how has the geopolitical climate, if you will, how has that affected international student enrollment in DeKalb?
Our international enrollment is actually down 19%, and I saw this morning that's exactly the number that's down across the country. And we are down because students who wanted to be Huskies, who wanted to come to DeKalb and pursue an education, were unable to schedule visa interviews. We're doing everything we can to stay in touch with them. We're hoping they can join us later, but the stakes are high across our country. Our system of higher education has always been the envy of the world. It's always attracted the best and the brightest from around the globe because of our cultivation of critical thinking and our culture of innovation, our commitment to academic freedom, and the way we prepare individuals in American higher education, not only for professional success, but for responsible citizenship and civic engagement and lifelong learning. For these reasons, we've attracted top talent from around the world. And now that top talent is looking outside of the US because we're making it hard for them to get here. We're making them feel unwelcome. That's going to impact our national competitiveness. On a campus like NIU, it's going to impact the intellectual environment of our campus. Having students from many different countries is something that makes our campus stronger. This year, we have students from all 50 states and from 104 countries. And that type of geographic diversity adds to the intellectual vibrancy of our campus.
How would you characterize Northern's relationship with the federal government right now?
I think that at NIU, as at all public universities, particular public research universities, we're seeing that the assumptions we've made about the relationship between the federal government and universities and the partnership we had to support research and scholarship to reinforce national security and economic competitiveness and public health, that partnership doesn't look the way we've expected it to look since post-World War II. Grants, funding mechanisms are being changed. Our faculty are, in some cases, struggling because commitments that were made to them are not being realized. The fallout from this is that students have fewer opportunities. Some of the federal funding that supported international relationships, like our Center for Southeast Asian Studies, these are things that help with soft diplomacy. There are strategic alliances that come out of those types of relationships, but all of these are under scrutiny and not, we can't depend on what we depended on previously. And so we're going to have to pivot. We're certainly not stranding students and faculty who are in the middle of projects. We're working very hard to get philanthropy and corporate and foundation funds in to make up for that. We're helping our faculty find alternative sources of funding for research, but it's a different game with different rules.
I understand $3 million in federal grants eliminated, according to reporting from our partner station, WNIJ. That's out of nearly $7 million total at Northern.
Our total external funding portfolio is about $60 million, and $3 million is what we have actually lost out of $7 million of grants that were impacted by federal change
I see what you're
or
saying. Okay.
termination.
Thank you for clarifying that. All right. Another issue in this vein. Last week, the Trump administration put out a memo it calls the Compact for Academic Excellence in Higher Education. Basically, it's asking schools to freeze tuition for 5 years, require applicants to take the ACT or SAT, and ban race and sex as considerations for hiring and admission. The trade-off is the administration says schools that sign on would get priority for federal grants. Would you sign Northern to such an agreement?
You know, I think there are some underlying messages in the compact that universities need to be mindful of as we strive to live up to the ideals of fulfilling our public mission. But the specifics of the compact are of significant concern to me in a number of areas. Let's start with standardized tests. Prior to COVID, prior to it being fashionable, NIU looked at our own admissions and student success data, and we found that ACT and SAT scores were not predictive of students' ability to succeed at NIU, whereas high school GPA was. And so we felt that using the standardized tests for admissions and for financial aid was not ethical, knowing that they didn't predict student success. And yet some of our most vulnerable students, our students with the least social capital from the most under-resourced background, were being denied financial aid because of their standardized test scores. We would not go back to requiring standardized tests, knowing that removing that barrier has really enhanced the success and opportunity for our students. There are elements in the compact that I think challenge the ideals of academic freedom and freedom of expression. And I would not be in favor of supporting those. At NIU, we believe that educators within the university should be able, with their research and their teaching, to explore and discuss ideas without interference, without fear of retaliation or censorship or restriction from either within the university or from external authorities. We also think that all individuals in our community as members of a free society should have broad latitude to speak, to write, listen, challenge, and learn different ideas, some of which might be unorthodox or unpopular or even offensive. What we try to tell our students about freedom of expression and academic freedom is any idea you have is likely to have someone in opposition to it. Anything you say is likely protected by the First Amendment, but that doesn't mean it won't have some negative impact. We try to encourage our students to and our faculty to support the respectful exchange of ideas, to have meaningful dialogue across differences, to appreciate the value to the intellectual environment of the university of having diverse viewpoints and experiences reflected in our university community, and to making different voices feel acknowledged.
We got a question from
the compact actually promotes those ideals.
Sure. We got a question from a listener, Danny in DeKalb, who says, what is NIU doing to protect undocumented students and staff? ICE was just spotted this morning, a mile or so off campus. I'm an NIU alumna with a degree in Spanish. I know just how much of a positive impact Latina community has had on the university, and they deserve to be protected.
Let me say that NIU has always been extremely supportive of our undocumented student community. We were the model for the legislation that Illinois requires Illinois universities to have undocumented student liaisons and support services. I was on a panel just last week in Chicago with legislators and other university presidents talking about the ways that we support undocumented students. We are making sure that students and faculty understand the rights that undocumented students have on our campuses. understand what the law says about which spaces are private, which spaces are public, understand the types of warrants that are required to detain individuals. NIU will always follow the law, but we believe it is the right, a human right of our undocumented students to seek an education. And we make sure that our university community is very well educated about the steps that can be taken.
Just about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left in our time together. We've seen this precipitous decline in trust in a lot of institutions in American life. Higher education is among them. What does higher education need to be doing to rebuild trust? Again, just about a minute and a half left.
I've talked a lot about the things that we need to do to help students access higher education, attain a degree, and be successful afterwards, and the ways that we should make sure that our universities are welcoming of different viewpoints, different communities, and individuals. All of public higher education, and NIU is certainly at the forefront here, we strive to live up to deliver that public mission, to live up to those ideals. But we shouldn't be afraid to admit that we could do better and that we're doing the hard work of being better tomorrow than we are today. We should listen to feedback from the public and we should also myth bust. We should also share information about the number of students on our campuses who are not paying tuition and fees, who are receiving high amounts of non-loan aid, of who are succeeding after they, so that students have the real data. We put on our web pages career outcomes for different majors. We want students to make informed choices. We want to have real conversations about how higher education can deliver more value. And we look forward to having those as we all try to do a better job to make our democracy stronger and our state more prosperous.
Lisa Freeman is the president of Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. Dr. Freeman, thank you for being with us on the 21st show.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
That's all the time we have for our program today. You heard a few text messages from our listeners during the show today. If you want to be among them on a future broadcast, you can join our texting group by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, the word is TALK to 217-803-0730. You can also find that information on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.